Good morning, everybody. This is Katie Lear, the convention coordinator. Welcome to our GDUF, Guide Dog Users of Florida, annual meeting. Welcome to our members, to ACB, to FCB, people on Zoom land, people on Media 8, and on the upcoming podcasts. We'd like to thank Joyce Feinberg. She's our room opener and monitor. She keeps us straight. Our host is Belle Collins, and our streamer is Herbie Allen. I'm sorry. I'm reading ahead on my notes here. Also, we'd like to thank Ryan Cordell, who is manning our Zoom board in our room. Oh, he just did a big smile. Okay, Dove, take it away. This is our president of GDUF.
Thank you, Katie. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our 2025 meeting of Guide Dog Users of Florida. Just to let you know, we're going to be having a very short business meeting at the beginning to announce the elected officers. I've decided to do away with reports from the treasurer and the secretary because that's online. So we have more time to spend talking about transitioning with guide dogs. That's an area that those of us who have had several dogs deal with all the time in terms of how do you go from one guide dog to another? How do you get your first dog? What kinds of issues that you have to deal with? We have three panelists of veteran guide dog users. Is Chelsea in yet? Good, thank you. Good morning, Chelsea. The three panelists we have are Chelsea White from CNI, Debbie Grubb from FCB, and me. And all three of us have had multiple dogs and have dealt with multiple issues regarding what to do with when you get a new dog. So we're going to be talking about that. Okay, first of all, by the way, thank you, Katie, for the door prizes. Too bad it wasn't me. I want to mention to start with, we had our elections in Guide Dog Users of Florida. Elections are good for 2 years, and they're basically, the incoming president, and watch this one. The incoming president's name is Judy August. She's known as Judy Birch, but that's not her name. And she impressed on me that she wants to be introduced as Judy August. And she's the incoming president. The incoming vice president is Jody Jenquil from Gainesville. The incoming secretary is, let me see if I can get it right, Brianna Bowden, I think. And the incoming treasurer, who's been treasurer for many, many, many years, is Kathleen Trutchell. So that's your incoming officers for the next 2 years. Okay, moving right into our presentation. I would like to start, Chelsea, if you are there, could you go ahead and introduce yourself and give your background, how many dogs you've had and what you're doing?
I do as little as possible. Good morning, everybody. I am very sorry that I wasn't able to be there. I had plans and they fell apart. So I am Chelsea White, and I am outreach for the Seeing Eye. So I travel around the country sharing information about guide dogs and all that kind of stuff. But more importantly, I'm also a graduate of the Seeing Eye. I am working dog number 6. She is about a 60-pound German Shepherd named Yen, kind of like the money. And I've had dogs now for almost 35 years. This summer, July 15th, will be 35 years. So that is me.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on quickly for introductions, I want to give this to Debbie Grubb, and let me hand her the mic.
Hello, everybody. My name is Debbie Grubb, and I am on guide dog number 4. Not because I'm so young, but because I started late. And I'll tell you that story when we begin the formal panel presentation. My current guide dog is Copper. He's from the Seeing Eye, and he is now 9. And so I am grappling with, when do I apply, and a whole bunch of things that we will talk about. I have loved all of my guide dogs, and I am a loyal guide dog user, and I love technology too, but I can't imagine my life without a guide dog in it. So now I'm going to turn it back to our moderator, Mr. Hall, President Hall, at least for the next couple of hours.
Okay. All done?
Yep, there you go.
Where is it? Okay, now you get to hear from me. Speaking of 9, I am working with my 9th guide dog. I've had 6 guide dogs from Guiding Eyes and 3 from Seeing Eye. And frankly, I choose which school to go to depending on who has a dog when I'm ready. And this last one, Guiding Eyes called me and said, when can you come? And Guiding Eyes did not have an opening, so I went to Guiding Eyes. Okay. Like I said, I've had 9 guide dogs. I've been involved with FCB for... 49 years, give or take. We are going to now, I want to talk about this is an issue that comes across constantly. What do we do when we have to get a new guide dog, whether it's because our last guide dog died or retired, or we chose to get a new guide dog, or whatever reason. There are a lot of issues that a person has to go through to decide about getting a dog, whether it's the first dog or a dog later. And there are a lot of issues that we that all of us have to look at and make a decision. One of the problems that I've seen with getting guide dogs is that it's very common that a person coming in to get a new guide dog has a problem that they have a tendency sometimes to compare their new dog with the old dog who lasted for years. And for some reason, new dog doesn't know what the old dog do. So, but there are a lot of issues that we all need to look at. And I am going to start with, we'll do an alphabetical, start with Chelsea to discuss her many years of using dogs. Chelsea?
Cool. Thank you, Doug. So like I said earlier, almost 35 years with a dog. I think I was born to be a guide dog handler. I was born visually impaired, always was not a fan of the cane. I mean, it's great, and it has its place and its purpose. And for some people, it's, you know, their mobility tool of choice. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But as soon as I found out about guide dogs and that they existed and what they did and how they worked, I knew that was me. That was how I wanted to travel. That was going to be my mobility tool of choice. And the first time I did a Juno walk, I mean, that really just cemented it. I was like, yep, this is it. So making that decision initially for me was not a difficult one. And so I did some research into the different schools, chose the Seeing Eye for reasons that we can get into if we want later, but I won't now. Applied this summer between sophomore and junior year of high school. Received my first dog that summer. And with the exception of about 6 months between my first dog and my second dog, I've been a guide dog user ever since. So, I went 6 months between my first dog and my second dog. Because I wasn't, I lost my first dog pretty suddenly. She, we think had intestinal cancer, never went through the testing to see for sure, but, cause it wouldn't have, other than an answer, it wouldn't have helped with anything. So she passed fairly suddenly, and, I wasn't quite, I mean, I knew I wanted another dog because, like I said, I'm born to be a guide dog handler. But I wasn't. It was kind of at a point in life where things weren't. I wasn't quite sure where I was going with school, and actually, to be perfectly honest, with life in general. But I knew that, you know, I wanted another dog at some point in time. And so once I finally got sort of things figured out, was, you know, in a place, home environment that was more stable and all that kind of stuff, I applied again to the Seeing Eye and went and got dog number two. And that transition was pretty easy for me initially. Because I think because there had been so much time between dogs that I had the opportunity to, you know, grieve for my first dog's loss, and get really frustrated with the cane and then, you know, set my mind to, okay, you know, this is going to be a new dog, a new, you know, everything's going to be, you know, new and different. So that transition for me was pretty easy. And then it was during dog number two's working career that I started working for the Seeing Eye, and traveling all over the country. And the retirement of dog number two was a little difficult. Because she was matched to me, not to travel all across the country. And so that traveling really got to be too much for her. And so I had to make the difficult decision to retire her. And that was difficult. She was a fantastic dog. And for me, you know, retiring a dog for health reasons, it makes it obvious. You know, the dog's health is such that, you know, they need to retire, right? Because either we're not safe or it's not comfortable for them to keep working or whatever the case may be. But to retire for non-health related issues is tough because it's not quite so black and white. And so I think, you know, having to retire my second dog for non-health issues, made the retirement a little tougher for me, but also made the transition a little more difficult. 'Cause like Doug said, you know, my second dog, I always tell people she was perfect. She wasn't. I know she wasn't, but in my head she was. And you know, dog number three was not. And you know, I did a lot of that, you know, well, Flower was my second dog. And I'm like, well, Flower would do it this way. And how come this dog isn't? And so it made that transition a little bit harder. And I thankfully had a wonderful instructor who kept reminding me, this isn't Flower. And I, he said it enough that I started to hear it in my head when I would start to question, you know, why is she doing this? Or, you know, Flower didn't do it this way. I would hear him in my head say, this is not Flower. And I've kept that going on since with every new dog. You know, cause you know, if you have a good long working relationship with a dog, you know, when you get to that next dog, It's hard. It's hard not to compare. But I always keep it in. I always keep that instructor's voice in my head saying, "This, this is not that last dog." So, that is where we are at. So.
Before I pass the mic to Debbie, I wanted to thank all you people who are here virtually around the state and around the country that are joining us to hear this very important topic. And let me hand the mic to Debbie and make sure she.
I do. I'm going to tell you a story that taught me so much before I was ready to learn it. I had a bit of usable vision, not much, but I knew how to use every jot of that usable vision. I knew how to use the light source in a room to orient myself. I could see on the street the difference between the dark and the white lines. And one day, that vision began to go away. And my husband, Frila, was so loving to me, but he knew when to be tender and he knew when to be tough. And I began to do something I'd never done before. I began to depend on him in a bit of a clinging way. Now, he was always there to help me, but the help was always to be a help that would allow me to be more independent and better. And one day he said to me, "Deborah, I am not your guide dog." And it made me so mad that I went right into the house. I called the seeing eye. I told them who I was. And of course, back then, it was 91, there was no online applications. I applied. And believe it or not, they had an opening that would have taken place over the Thanksgiving holidays. And they called me and they said, "We have a last minute opening. Would you like to come?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Do you have to ask your husband?" I said, "No." Now, when I got there, I got this little German shepherd named Flory. She had those adorable little stand-up ears. She was plucky. She was fun. And she was what I dreamed my seeing eye dog would look like. But Flory got very protective of me. And so when people would come near, she would bark or growl. And I, by this time in my life, was doing a lot of public advocacy work. And so it was Thanksgiving Day. And I learned that I had to have a dog change. And I cried my heart out. I was absolutely brokenhearted. And I felt as though I had failed. And I'm going to tell you something I didn't know that you all will help you to know ahead of time. I thought the dog was completely trained, and the person, the being that needed to be trained was me. And I thought I had failed, and I thought I had let my Flory girl down. And my trainer, who then worked at the Seeing Eye, was Larissa Sherrickin. And we walked down to the office, and she said, "Pete Lang has come in on Thanksgiving Day." And so I went in there, and I was crying, and it was terrible. And he tried to explain to me that I hadn't failed. And he said, "We've got another little girl for you." And I said, "What's going to happen to Flory?" And he said, "She'll go back in the program. It's okay." And he took her away. And I remember Larissa said, "Do you want me to go with you, Pete?" And he said, "No, you stay with Mrs. Grubb." Because back then it was still in the days when everybody was Mr., Miss, and Mrs. So he came back with this little bouncy golden retriever named Libby. She was damp from her bath. She had these floppy ears. She was absolutely adorable. And I wanted to dislike her on sight. And I believe it was God. People can believe what they choose and what they need to believe. But I had this strong feeling coming into my head and heart. Now, this little dog doesn't know you. She's nervous and frightened, probably. And it's not her fault that Flory couldn't be your guide dog. So you're going to act like you love this dog, even though you don't want her. You want stand-up ears. You don't want floppy ears. You want Flory back. This isn't Flory. But you know that they've told you and given you the best advice. And I was so beside myself. Pete Lang even said, now, if you want Flory, it's going to take a lot of work. And I said, no, I came to the school because I felt it was the best and I have to take your advice. So Libby and I went back to my room, and the first thing she did was jump on the bed. But what I'm going to tell you about her was she was so darned sweet and adorable and endearing that I began to love her. And I began to learn a lesson that I've learned with every dog that I've had to retire. And I want to tell you that every time I have retired a dog, it has been a heart-wrenching experience. I have felt like a part of my heart was torn away. But I went, and lots of times, every time I would get the next dog, I'd say, it's not this dog's fault. It's not dog so-and-so. And right now, you're going to work with this dog as a tribute to all of your past guide dogs. And that has truly worked for me, because I know that this next little dog that I get wants to please. The next thing I'm going to tell you is that, I don't know if they still say it now, but back in the day, they'd say, Mrs. Grubb or whomever, give that dog a paycheck. And that meant praise. And I remember Pete Jackson, who was another master trainer there, said to me, nobody really knows why these guide dogs work. We can train them to work. We can show them what to do. We can praise them when they do well. We can discipline them when they do poorly. But we don't know why they do it except for love. And what I also found out is this magic thing happens when a guide dog comes into your life. They've had their puppy raiser. They've had their trainer whom they love. And somehow, even though they can't put it into words, I have always found out that they go, wow, of the two of us in this little group, I'm the only one who can see a thing. And it is just the most wonderful experience. The final thing I'm going to say at this round of the discussion is that you have to decide that you are going to love your dog. You have to decide that on a night when it's cold and windy and pouring down rain, and you have to take your dog outside to relieve or park or busy or whatever the guide dog school calls it, that you can't resent that dog. You can't be mad, because you're not going to go to bed without going to the bathroom, and neither is this dog. So everything you do, whether it's retiring, whether it's replacing, whether it's working through problems, you have to do it in love. And here's the thing. All of us love in different ways. So you've got to find ways to express your love in a way that works for you. But love has to be the foundation on which every decision you make, every time you say forward, that it is love, like that book that we know so well called Love in the Lead, because it really is love in the lead. And so I have found every time I retire a guide dog, I cry. When I retired my second guide dog, Magic, who was Magic, she was a golden retriever. She was just astounding. And I had this little bouncy black lab, and I was getting training at home, and the trainer came to fetch us to continue our training. And I walked out the door and I just broke down into sobs, and I'm not that kind of person. And she said, Debbie, it's all right. I'll be back. And she came back in about 20 minutes, And I had a talk with my new dog, Dina, and I said, we're going to make this work. Mommy's sorry she cried, but I'm going to love you just like I love Magic and just like I love Libby. And so that's the thing. So everything we do, even though we are different people, different personalities, it's all built on a foundation of love and respect. And you have to know that ultimately, some sort of separation, retirement because of age, death, illness, whatever it might be, is going to come. But what I'm going to tell you is, when I'm working my dog, I don't think about that. I think I'm going to enjoy every day. Every time I can say that word forward, I'm going to enjoy it. And I'm going to live every day in knowing that this is my key to freedom. And when the time comes to retire, I will deal with it. I will deal with it with love and fairness and respect to my new dog, replacement dog, successor dog, and to the dog that I am retiring. And I tell you, it has been a system, advice, a way of life with my guide dogs that has served me very well. I'm also going to tell you that I've had a guide dog since 1991, and I still, every time I say forward and I feel the pressure on that harness handle and I move out, put my foot out in front with me and follow my dog, I get a little thrill. It never grows old. It never grows too familiar. So I'm going to now pass the microphone on to Doug.
Okay. Oops, got it. Thank you. Okay, before I start my little piece, I wanted to say, if you have any questions or comments, please raise your hand and Katie or someone will call on you. Okay, give you a little bit of background on me. My first guide dog I got in 1972. And I didn't get it because one of the things I want to say is people have different reasons to get a guide dog or not get a guide dog. People have various reasons to retire or to get a new guide dog if they want one. I have a friend who's decided he doesn't want another guide dog. He had his experiences were not positive, and he's not so sure he wants another one, and that's his choice. I will say what you do is up to you. Now, my first guide dog, I did not because I was blind and lost all my vision in 1956. And I was a good cane user, but I had what's called Absan or petit mal seizures, which means that I kept doing whatever I was doing, but I was unconscious while I was doing it. And it's really not a good idea to be walking or using a cane or driving or whatever it is, and you all of a sudden just blank out. And I was in college, and I walked down 3 flights of stairs while I was unconscious. And I decided, you know, that's not really a good idea. So I applied, and I applied to Seeing Eye and Guiding Eyes. Pete Campbell from Guiding Eyes called me immediately and said, well, we're not so sure, but we'll give you a try. Well, we discovered that my dog worked better when I was having a seizure. I worked better when I was having a seizure. The instructor said he could tell I was having a seizure because I worked better with my dog. That was my first dog. And I've had several, and each dog, after I've had the dog for a while, I have to think about what do I want to do? When is this dog ready to be retired? When do I want to get another dog? And it's a personal decision we all have to make. I know a lady who had a dog until it was 15. She just couldn't deal with getting rid of the dog, even though the dog didn't work anymore, but she didn't want to get rid of it. So it was a question of, I think the dog was more important than her independence at this point, but that's her personal choice. I knew a lady in class who went, and at that time, the classes were 26 days. She went 3 weeks in class and all of a sudden discovered the dog didn't like children. The dog was fine. It worked really well. But the dog attacked a child. It was the son of a volunteer. that dog was retired and she got a new dog. That had to be tough for her. So everyone has a reason for what they're going to do. And it's really important to take a look at it. Why are you deciding what you're doing? Whether it's getting your first dog, like Debbie said, or like I said, it is a change in lifestyle looking at getting a guide dog. And then once you've had a dog, you know, that things happen. You know, one of the things that students have said to me that problem they have with getting a guide dog is that the new guide dog just can't do what the old dog did. And that's true. You know, if you had a dog for 5 years and the dog knows you and you work well together and you get a new dog who doesn't know what you want, yeah, the dog's not, it's like, you know, anybody who's new. But one of the things to remember is that those of us who get a guide dog, we take that dog, we're trained how to do things, but then when we get home, you know, we have a tendency to change the training to suit us. And one of the big problems for, I call them retreads, one of the big problems for retrains when they go back to get a new guide dog is they have to unlearn bad habits before they can learn good habits. And that's a truism. I remember one of my dogs, I was working with a mobility instructor, and she said, you know, you got a problem. And I had a new dog, and I said, what's the problem? She said, well, when you come to a curb, and I had this dog for years, and I swear this dog could just would read my mind. I'd come to a curb, and I'd say forward, and as I said forward, I'd step off the curb. And the dog just, you know, just knew what I was doing. Well, when I got the new dog, did the same thing, except he said, wait a minute, if you're going to step off the curb, why should I bother? So he waited for me to step off for before he would do what he had to do. So I actually had to unlearn a bad habit that I had developed. That's something to watch out for. Like I said, I've had 9 dogs. Each dog has its own personality. Matter of fact, Mark Lear said to me this morning that I've had Maverick 9 months, and I was commenting about how distracted he is. Well, you know, I'm not used to that. My dogs have been around for a long time, and they just don't get distracted. But this guy gets distracted big time. So it's something that I have to work on. Okay, do we have any questions so far? Guess not? Okay, good. Okay. Those of you either here or online probably have experiences of what you've done, what you haven't done, why you have a dog or not have a dog. Like I said, Maverick is my 9th. I've had 3 labs, 3 goldens and 3 shepherds, and they've all been wonderful. I'm frequently asked the question, what is your favorite dog? And my answer usually is the dog I have, because I don't compare my dogs. Yes, I remember things that my dogs, past dogs have done, but each dog has its own personality. It's like having children. Do we have any comments here from Debbie or from Chelsea? Okay. You want the mic? There you go.
I also just want to say that having a guide dog is a responsibility, but if you love the work and the freedom, then it's worth it. Now, today, I'm going to give you a little anecdote. I found the written explanation of this hotel difficult to understand. Why? Because I am a cerebral traveler. That's why when I lost a little bit of vision I had, I couldn't manage well and got a guide dog, because I have a brain thing. which means that I don't have a compass in my head. I have to ask questions. I have to understand cerebrally. And if I understand cerebrally, I can travel with the best of them. And I said that in my last application to get copper at the Seeing Eye, and they seem to really get it. Because if I understand and have, you know, my husband, Freela, who, God bless him. Anyway, he taught me so many things to overcome this problem, like looking for landmarks, listening for sounds, counting streets. You know, did this sidewalk go uphill? And it's amazing because it helps me and it keeps me oriented. And I can do this. And I'm not just a route traveler. I'm good at learning new things. I just need to ask questions before I start out. So what I wanted to say is that we all have different abilities and we all have different problems. And the great thing about these experienced trainers at guide dog schools, if we are honest, I know when I went to guide dog school the first time, there was this guy and he wanted to be so macho. And he said, man, I walk fast. Well, they believed him. And he got this dog and the dog was pulling him all over creation and he was tripping over his feet because he lied. So it's good to be truthful about what our lifestyle is like, what we need, what we need special assistance with, the kind of dog we need. I work my dog every day. Unless I'm sick, there's not a day that harness does not go on my dog. But I don't have a routine anymore. I don't go to an office. So some days I might go to the drugstore. Some days I might go to a theater and go to my seat with my dog. And of course, going into the theater isn't that bad because people go in all different times. But my guide dogs are champions because I needed it from them of taking me out of the theater, getting me around people, and still working when people go, oh, isn't that amazing? Isn't that dog beautiful? Look at how that dog is carefully guiding that woman. And my dogs just say, I'm going to get you out the door. Then we're going to go find the Uber or the bus or whatever it is. So when you are thinking about getting a dog, don't put on a show. Be really honest about what your life is like, what you're going to be using the dog for, and if you've got a special need. Maybe you've got a compass in your head like my husband did, who always knew where he was and never had to, he just knew. I didn't, but he cared enough about me that he thought it out in his mind and he showed me ways to make up for that which I didn't have. And I will tell you this too because it's so dear. When I came home with each of my new guide dogs, my husband would be with me and we would walk our routes. And one day he'd say, I'll see you there, Deborah. And I knew that he knew that I could do this on my own. And I would go by myself and he would meet me if we were going to go to lunch or wherever. And I'd cross the streets and I'd do the thing because he thought I could do it. I knew I could do it. And I want to end with this, if I can do it without crying. Copper is the only guide dog that I've ever had who didn't know my husband. And I returned to the Seeing Eye because my husband said to me, Deborah, I'm not going to be here. And I want you to have guide dogs. And I want you to get out in this world and do what we did. And so I felt safe with the Seeing Eye because they worked with a lot of totally blind people. And they gave me this dog, Copper, my first boy, the first dog that I would work without the enabling and the best form of the word help of my husband. And when I came home, because I told some of my best friends about patterning, and I said, I'm going to need you to help me a little bit, but it won't be long. Well, my first friend, she patterned. She said, I'll help you for 2 days. Well, after the second day of the things I was doing, My dog knew, I knew, we were doing it, we were getting it done. So my other friend said, well, when are we going to get a chance to pattern with you? And I said, well, when I need it, I guess with my next dog. But God and the seeing eye just looked out for me. I had never had a boy before, and they knew that. And they said, Debbie, we've got this dog in mind for you. He's a boy. And my first inclination was to whine and say, but I've always had girls. But I heard myself saying, and another thing, I think this was a God thing, if you think he's the right dog for me, I'm going to give him a try. And I haven't regretted it a day in my life. And I have been a big girl and on my own in the world. And I am blessed to have family, but they're far away. I'm blessed to have wonderful friends, but I'm determined they're not going to be my caregivers. And it's Copper and me out there doing it. And I just want to tell you that nothing can replace that. And even though I'm going to cry my heart out when I retire my coppery boy, I'm going to go back to the seeing eye and I'm going to do this thing all over again, because that's what we do. And so it doesn't mean that you're disloyal to your former dog or you didn't love him enough. But as I said, if you love in tribute, and then very soon, you begin to love this dog. And the other thing, the human heart has infinite room. I think of my other dogs and I love them just as much as I ever did. And I love them with every ounce of my love, but I love Copper with every ounce of my love. And I will love this next dog, whoever he or she is, with every ounce of my love. And so retiring can be a grievous process, but it's also the gateway to possibility. And that's what I always tell myself. So I'm going to hand it back to Doug for the next question or whatever he has in mind.
Thank you much. I've been sitting here writing notes of what Debbie was saying. I think one of the things I was thinking about is that if a person decides to get a guide dog or not get a guide dog, the question is why? Is it for independence? Is it for socialization? Is it to impress people? Everybody has a reason of why they're going to do it. The other thing, and Debbie mentioned earlier, that one of the things for those of us having a guide dog is we have to be willing to work. There's an awful lot of work that goes into making a good team. I think most of the instructors would be happy to say that the quality of a team depends on what you put into it or what we put into it. And I've discovered that over the years, the various classes I've been to, the various guide dog users I've met, it all depends what we put into the thing. And it does take time. That's one of the things we need to remember when we're getting a new dog. We need to remember that new dog doesn't know what we want, and we don't know what it wants. So it's a question of, you know, they say that communication is a two-way street down that leash. You can teach the dog that it's not wanted. You can teach the dog that it's afraid. Or that dog can learn that you love it and then you're willing to work with it. And I've discovered with my dogs is that, and it's just me, that I remember my very first instructor saying that your job is to follow that dog. If you're not sure, just follow the dog. The dog is going to do what's safe for the dog and what's safe for you. If I'm confused, I just follow my dog. And like this morning, I went outside to walk Maverick and got locked out. My key didn't work, so I couldn't get back in. So I ended up walking around the outside of the hotel. Now, I didn't know where I was. I just followed my dog. And I got back in, thank goodness. So it's a challenge that we go through all the time. The dogs are great because dogs give us the opportunity to try things, to have adventures. You know, back before I got my first dog, you know, I used a cane. I just didn't do things because it was easier not to do things. When you have a dog, you have to go out and you have to do things to keep that dog going. And what you give the dog gives back to you many times over. Chelsea, you want to add something?
I want to touch a little bit on, you know, we've kind of talked about it just a little bit and sort of alluded to, you know, why do people, you know, why do people choose to get a dog? Why do people choose to get another dog? You know, why may somebody choose, you know, not to get a dog or to get another dog? You know, I think we all, I know, Doug, you said, you know somebody who has a dog and, you know, is going to probably choose not to have another one. And so I think really, you know, doing a little sit down with yourself and, you know, saying, okay, you know, what's my life like? What do I do? How is this dog going to fit into my life? And how is this dog, you know, going to help or assist or enhance, my life? And, you know, kind of having a little discussion with yourself, and being honest with yourself and saying, you know, well, right now I don't know that, you know, taking the dog, like Debbie said, you know, you're standing out there at 6 o'clock in the morning and it's, you know, 40 degrees and it's pouring down rain. You know, I don't know that I want to do that, or I don't know that I want to do that anymore. You know, is not, you know, it's not a bad, you know, it's not wrong to say that to yourself, to say, I just, you know, it's not worth it to me anymore. And to also, you know, look at, you know, am I really going to use this dog and, you know, use it to its fullest potential and, you know, make this dog, what it was meant to be? I think it's important to kind of have those discussions with yourself, because it is a lot of work. You know, Doug said that this is not easy, and it's not. And, you know, it's not wrong to sit down and, you know, have that discussion and to come to a conclusion and say, you know, no, a dog is not right for me now. Or another dog is not right for me at this moment. So we have this program, we call Seeing Eye Seminar for Youth. And we bring students, teenagers, to Seeing Eye for a couple of days, and give them a good taste of what it would be like to have a dog. You know, so they do all the dog things. They take a dog out to relieve. They have to pick up after the dog. They groom the dog. They feed the dog. And you know, they go into town and walk routes with the dog, and, you know, so actually, you know, work with the dog. And it's really interesting to talk to students then after they've had that experience. You know, some kids are like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever. And, you know, picking up poop isn't nearly as disgusting as I thought it was going to be. And, you know, this is fantastic. I love it. And then, you know, we had a student this last summer who, the reality of having a dog and working with a dog and all that kicked in for her. And she was like, right now, a dog is not going to be a good fit for my life, because she's like, I really want to focus on my schoolwork. And, you know, having to take a dog out four times a day takes away from my study. And so she, you know, it really hit home for her that, you know, dogs are great and I love it, but maybe not right now. And so it's, you know, it's not a bad thing to do that. You know, when you're thinking about a first dog or your next dog. So that is what I have to add.
Okay, thank you very much. Good thoughts. You know, I'm thinking that one of the things we need to do before we get a new dog or get a first dog or whatever it is, take a look at our own lifestyle. How would that dog impact on that lifestyle? Would it encourage us to do things? Does it help with what we're doing in lifestyle? My first 7 dogs, I was working, and that made a difference in terms of my working. But dogs 8 and 9, I was retired and my lifestyle changed. And that's something that has to be considered. Okay, do we have any comments or questions from anyone in the audience, either virtually or here? Yes.
Okay, thanks. I was going to say thank you both and the person on Zoom too from the Seeing Eye for your comments and sharing your stories. And one thing I want to say, and I have my first guide dog from GDB, and I'm in the process to, you know, get my second dog. But one thing that I do when I'm going to new locations, I've done so I can get that mental map, which I'm pretty good at, is I do an O&M lesson without my dog. And that really helps me. I even went to the Brightline station and did that last year. And the other thing I just want to comment, probably the worst thing that can happen when you have a guide dog, which happened to us a little over 2 years ago, is we were attacked by a 90-pound bully breed, and my dog needed immediate medical attention and had to get, you know, vet care and stitches and stuff. And the other thing that can be a little challenging, as we all know too, is with Uber denials. But for the most of it, I can even tell you, our dogs are with us for good and bad times. We've been to funerals. She's been through chemo with me. And to have everything to me personally is easier to do with this beautiful dog at my side. Thanks.
Debbie and Chelsea and Doug, this is Chuck Heitz along with Debbie's here. My question for you guys is, what is your relationship with your guide dog schools after you graduate, and how important is that relationship for file training when you need it, but just having a relationship with your school? And what's your experience with schools? You've had a good relationship, bad relationship, or no relationship once you graduate?
Good question. Like, I've gotten dogs from 2 different schools, and afterward, I think the schools, well, I think part of it is the way my behavior is, but I think both of the schools see me as an advisor, as a source of information. I know guys where I got Maverick from would like me to serve on the graduate council. So it depends on the person. I've always had a fairly good relationship with the schools I've had dogs from. And I think Debbie has a comment.
All right.
I too have had guide dogs from 2 different schools. My first guide dog came from Libby Birdie, came from Seeing Eye. And when I moved down south here to Florida, I thought it might be a good thing to try Southeastern with dogs that lived in Florida, were born in Florida. And I got my Maggie dog, and my gosh, you know, we were talking about, I love her as much now as I ever did, and I think of her, and I remember how she felt, all of my dogs. But what I wanted to say is, I have always tried to be, without making a big deal of it, an ambassador for my school. I've always tried to work my guide dog well, with pride, with love, with encouragement. And I'm, you know, some people want to be involved in the school every minute of every day. I kind of feel my best my best gift that I can give to the school is live my life and work my dog. And I remember one day, Friel and I went into the place where we paid our water bill when we were in our house. And I heard somebody say, I see those people all over Manatee County. And so I feel, but see, again, everybody's different. There was one graduate of the Seeing Eye I Know that was so in love with the school that she actually moved to New Jersey. And so, and you know, so everybody is different, but I have the highest respect for the trainers, the people that, all the people that made this beautiful guide dog thing happen. And what I will tell you is every time I meet a puppy raiser, no matter what school they're from, I thank them from my heart. And I say, you know, there would be no guide dog program without you. And so I think that if we want to support our school with money, if we want to go to every event they have, we should. And but I have the highest respect for my school, especially now that I'm on my own in the world. But I just feel that I live my life and I do the best I can. But the final thing I'm going to say is I know how to ring up the school if I have a question, if I have a problem. And I know that there is someone with expertise who will help me through whatever the problem is, no matter what the outcome of it happens to be. And so I want to say that that brings me a lot of comfort, and it also makes me feel more brave, because whatever happens, I know ultimately I've got the support of some of the best experts in the world who will lend me a hand. And the other thing I'm finally going to say is, sometimes it's just so nice to have friends who are guide dog handlers. And that is very, very important too.
Thank you. I want to add one other thing to what Debbie said. I think it's very important that we maintain good communication with the school, because we're giving them information that lets them know how best to train dogs, and also letting us know what kinds of things we need to do to make our dogs into good teams, or make our teams into good teams. So I do encourage that we continue a good open communication with the schools. If there's a problem, you know, it's amazing. The school, I've only gone to two schools, so, but in general, I have found that if you have a problem, you call the school. The school is more than happy to help you solve the problem. I think it's a problem if you don't, and the problem gets worse. And then when the problem gets worse, then you blame the dog and you blame the school. Okay, any other questions or comments? It is 10:30. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it. You enjoy. And I encourage you to go by the exhibits to take a see what's going on. That's about what I'm going to be doing. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.